Elsa had her long rifle barrel thrust through the firing aperture, ready to raise the butt to her shoulder with the minimum of movement. It was a 7mm Remington Magnum, loaded with a 175-grain Nosler bullet that would cover the 65 yards to the bait tree at 3,000 feet per second. Shaza had the big 8-bore shotgun as a backup weapon. Designed for shooting wild geese at long range, it was a devastating weapon for close work. As the beat of the Toyota engine faded, the silence of the bushveld descended on the river valley. It was a silence that whispered with the tiny, intimate sounds. The gentle sigh of the breeze in the leaves above their heads, the stir of the bird in the undergrowth along the river, the far-off booming shout of a bull baboon that echoed faintly along the rocky cliffs at the head of the valley, and the tiny ticking sounds of the termite legions gnawing away at the dry mapani poles on which they sat. Both of them had brought books to while away the hours until dusk, but neither of them opened them. They sat very close to each other, and they were vitally aware of each other's proximity. Shaza felt as comfortable and companionable in her presence as though they were old and trusted friends. He smiled at the fancy. He turned his head surreptitiously to glance at Elsa, and she had anticipated and was smiling at him already. She turned the hand that lay on the arm of the chair between them, palm uppermost. He took the hand in his own, and was surprised by the smooth, warm feel of her skin, and by the sharp emotion her touch evoked. He hadn't felt like that for many, many long years. They sat side by side, holding hands like a pair of teenagers on their first date, and waited for the leopard to come. Although all his senses were tuned to the subtle sounds and signs of the wilderness, Shaza's mind was free to wander through the junk room of memory. He thought about many things in those quiet hours, as the sun turned across the blue dome of sky and sank towards the jagged line of hills. He thought about the other women he had known. There had been many of those. He had no way of knowing how many. The passage of time had rendered most of them faceless and nameless. Just a very few would remain with him forever. The first had been a sly-faced little harlot. When Santon had caught them at it, she had scrubbed him in a scalding tub of Lysol and carbolic soap that had taken the skin off his most tender parts. He smiled at that far-off memory. The other that stood out in his memory was Tara, mother of all his children. They had been antagonists from the very beginning. He had always thought of her as the beloved enemy. Then love had wrested the upper hand, and for a time they had been happy together. Finally, they had become enemies again. True enemies. Their enmity had been inflamed rather than mitigated by that brief, illusory period of happiness. After Tara, there had been 50 or 100 others. It did not really matter how many. Not one of them had been able to give him what he sought. Nor had they been able to alleviate the loneliness. Recently, in middle age, he had even fallen into the age-old trap of seeking immortality in those young feminine bodies that were themselves in the flower of their youth. Though the flesh was sweet and firm, he had found no contact of the mind, and could no longer match their energy. Sadly, he had left them to their booming, mindless music, and their frenetic search for they knew not what. He had walked on alone. He thought of loneliness then, as he did so often these days. Over the years, he had learnt that it was the most corrosive and destructive of all man's ills. Most of his life he had been alone, although there had been a half-brother. He had never known him as a sibling, and Santon had raised Shaza as an only child. In all the multitude of humankind that had filled his life, the servants and business associates, the acquaintances and sycophants, even his own children, there had been only one person with whom he had been able to share all the triumphs and disasters of his life, one who had been constant in her encouragement and understanding and love. However, Santon was 76 years old and aging fast. He was sick to his soul of the loneliness, and afraid of the greater loneliness which he knew lay ahead. At that moment, the woman who sat beside him tightened her grip on his hand as though she empathized with his despair. When he turned his head and looked into her honey-golden eyes, she was no longer smiling. Her expression was serious, and she held his gaze without shift or embarrassment. The sense of aloneness faded, and he felt calm and at peace as he seldom had in all his 50-odd years. Outside their little treehouse, the light mellowed and flared into the soft glow of the African twilight. It was a time of magical stillness, in which the world held its breath, and all the forest colours were richer and deeper. The sun sagged like a dying gladiator, and bowed its bloody head below the forest top. The light went with it. The outlines of the forest trunks and branches faded and softened and receded. A francolin called in the gloom. Shaza leant forward in his seat and looked through the firing aperture in the thatch wall. He saw the dark partridge-like bird perched on a dead branch on the far side of the river. Its bare cheeks were bright scarlet, and it cocked its head and looked down from its perch and made that creaking sound like a rusty hinge, which was the special warning. Beware! I see a killer cat. Elsa heard the call, and because she also knew the African wild and understood the meaning of it, she squeezed Shaza's hand briefly and then released it. Slowly she reached forward for the pistol grip of the rifle, and achingly slowly lifted the rifle to her shoulder. The tension in the hide was a palpable charge that held them both in its thrall. The leopard was out there, silent and secretive as a dappled golden shadow. They were both adepts in the art of the hunter, and neither of them moved except to blink their eyelids and keep their vision clear in the failing light. They drew and released each breath with infinite care, and heard the pulse of their racing hearts beat in their eardrums. The light was going faster, while the unseen leopard circled the bait tree. Shaza could imagine him in his mind's eye, each deliberate stealthy pace, the paw raised and held aloft and then laid down again softly, the yellow eyes endlessly turning and darting, the round black-tipped ears flicking to catch the faintest sound of danger. The outline of the bait tree receded. The carcass of the impala hanging on its chain was a dark amorphous blob. The open window of sky above the bare branch dulled and bruised to the shade of tarnished lead, and still the leopard prowled and circled in the dark thicket. Shooting light was almost gone. Night came on apace, and then suddenly the leopard was in the tree. There was no sound or warning. The abruptness of it was a little miracle that stopped both their hearts and then sent them racing away at a mad pace. The leopard stood on the branch. However, he was only a darker shape in the darkness, and even as Elsa laid her cheek to the polished walnut wood of the buttstock, the darkness was complete, and the shape of the leopard was swallowed up by the night. Shaza felt rather than saw Elsa lower the rifle. He stared through the aperture, but there was nothing to see, and he turned his head and laid his lips against Elsa's ear.
"We must wait until morning," he breathed,
and she touched his cheek in agreement. Out in the darkness they heard the clink of the chain links. Shaza imagined the leopard lying belly down on the branch, reaching down with one front paw to hook the carcass and draw it up, holding it with both front feet, sniffing the putrefying flesh hungrily, thrusting its head into the belly cavity to reach the lungs and liver and heart. In the silence they heard the tearing sound of fangs in flesh, the grating and splintering of rib bone, the ripping of wet hide as the leopard began to feed. The night was long, and Shaza could not sleep. As the hunter, his was the responsibility of monitoring each of the leopard's movements. After the first few hours, Elsa's head sagged against his shoulder. Moving stealthily, he slipped his arm around her, pulled the down-filled sleeping bag up snugly over her shoulders, and held her close while she slept. She slept quietly like a tired child. Her breathing was light and warm against his cheek. Even though his arm went dead and numb, he did not wish to disturb her. He sat happy and virtuous in his discomfort. The leopard fed at intervals during the night, the chain tinkling and bones grating and cracking. Then there were long periods of silence, when Shaza feared it had left, before the sounds began again. Of course, he could easily have turned the powerful spotlight on the tree and lit the leopard for her. It would have probably sat bemused, blinking those huge yellow eyes into the blinding beam. The idea never even occurred to him, and he would have been bitterly disappointed if Elsa had even contemplated such unfair tactics. Deep down, Shaza disliked the technique of baiting for the great cats. He had personally never killed one of them on a bait, although in Rhodesia it was perfectly legal. Sharza's own sporting ethic could never come to terms with luring them into a prepared position to offer a carefully staged broadside shot to a hidden marksman shooting from a dead rest. Every lion and leopard he had ever taken, he had tracked down on foot, often in the thickest cover, and the animal had been alert and aware of his presence. In consequence, he had experienced 100 failures and not more than 12 kills in all those years as a hunter. However, each success had been a peak of the hunting experience, a memory to last his lifetime. He did not despise Elsa or any of the other clients who took their cats over bait. They were not Africans, as he was, and their time in the bushveld was limited to a few short days. They were paying huge sums of money for the privilege, and much of that money was channeled back into the protection and conservation of the species they hunted. Therefore, they were entitled to the best possible chance of success. He did not resent them, but it just was not his way. Sitting beside her in the dark hide, he realized suddenly that his own hunting of the cats was over forever. Like so many old hunters, he had had his surfeit of blood. He loved the hunting game as much, probably more, than he ever had. But it was enough. He had killed his last elephant and lion and leopard. The thought made him glad and at the same time sad, a kind of sweet, warm melancholy that mingled well with the new emotion he had conceived for the lovely lady who slept on his shoulder. He thought how he would in future take his pleasure in the hunt through her, the way he was doing now. He dreamt happily of travelling with her to the hunting fields of the world. Russia, for the sheep of Marco Polo. Canada, for the polar bear. Brazil, for the spotted jaguar. And to Tanzania, for the great Cape buffalo, with a spread of horn over 50 inches wide. These vicarious pleasures sustained him through the long night. Then a pair of Heflin's robins chorused a duet from the undergrowth along the river, a melodious entreaty that sounded like, "Don't do it! Don't do it! Don't do it!" repeated over and over, at first softly and then rising to an excited crescendo. At this certain harbinger of the dawn, Sharza glanced upwards and made out the uppermost branches of the ebony tree against the lightening sky. It would be shooting light in 15 minutes. The dawn comes on swiftly in Africa. He touched Elsa's cheek to wake her, and immediately she snuggled against him. He realized that she must have been feigning sleep for some time. She had come awake so secretively that he had not realized it. Since then she had been lying against him there, savoring their intimate contact, just as he had been doing.
"Is the leopard still there?"
she asked, a breath of a whisper very close to his ear.
"Don't know,"
he answered as softly. It was almost 2 hours since he had last heard it feeding. Perhaps it had left already.
"Be ready,"
he warned her. She straightened in her chair and leant forward to where the rifle was propped in the forked rest. Although they were no longer touching, he felt very close to her, and his arm tingled with the flow of returning blood, which her head on his shoulder had impeded. The light strengthened. Vaguely he could make out the open window through the foliage of the ebony tree. He blinked his eyes and stared into it. The outline of the branch formed out of the gloom. The branch appeared bare. And he felt the swoop of disappointment for her. The leopard was gone. He turned his head slowly to tell her so, but he never took his eyes off the branch. He checked the words on his lips and stared harder, feeling the tiny ants of excitement crawl along his nerve ends. The outline of the branch was harder, but it was strangely thickened and misshapen. Now he could just make out the blob of the dangling impala carcass. Most of it had been devoured. It was a ravaged bundle of bared bones and torn skin. But there was something else hanging from the branch, a long, snake-like ribbon. He could not decide what it was until it curled and swung lazily. And then he realized. The tail. The leopard's tail. Like the hidden creature in the puzzle picture, the whole jumped into focus. The leopard was still draped on the branch, lying flat, its neck outstretched. Its chin was propped against the rough bark. It was sluggish with the weight of meat in its belly, too lazy to move from its perch. Only its long tail swung below. He felt Elsa stiffen beside him as she also made out the shape of the leopard. He reached across gently to restrain her. The light was still too poor. They must wait it out. As he touched her arm, he felt the tension in her through his fingertips. She seemed to vibrate like the strings of a violin lightly touched with the bow.